Dear God, where am I?
Welcome. We have been expecting you.
Welcome to Mind Walk, produced at Upstart Radio for Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Radio Free Moscow, IndieMedia.org, RadioForAll.net, community and micropower stations worldwide.
Ye who read are still among the living, but I who write shall have long since gone my way into the region of shadows. For indeed strange things shall happen and secret things be known, and many centuries shall pass away ere these memorials be seen of men. And when seen, there will be some to disbelieve and some to doubt, and yet a few who will find much to ponder upon. And the characters he had graven with a stillness of iron. The year had been a year of terror, and of feelings more intense than terror, for which there is no name upon the earth. For many prodigies and signs had taken place, and far and wide over sea and land, the black wings of the pestilence were spread abroad. To those nevertheless cunning in the stars, it was not unknown that the heavens were an aspect of ill, and to me the Greek Oinos, among others. It was evident that now had arrived the alternation of that 794th year when, at the entrance of Aries, the planet Jupiter is conjoined with the red ring of the terrible Saturnus. The peculiar spirit of the skies, if I mistake not greatly, made itself manifest, not only in the physical orb of the earth, but in the souls, imaginations, and meditations of mankind. Over some flasks of the Wenkian wine, within the walls of the noble hall, in a dim city called Ptolemais, we sat, at night, a company of seven. And to our chamber there was no entrance, save a lofty door of brass. And the door was fashioned by the artisan Corinus, and being of rare workmanship was fastened from within. Black draperies, likewise, in the gloomy room, shut out from our view the moon, the lurid stars, the people in the streets. But the boding and the memory of evil, they would not be so excluded. There were things around us and about us, of which I can render no distinct account, things material and spiritual, heaviness in the atmosphere, a sense of suffocation, anxiety, and above all, that terrible state of existence which the nervous experience when the senses are keenly living and awake, and meanwhile the powers of thought lie dormant. A dead weight hung upon us. It hung upon our limbs, upon the houses of furniture, upon the goblets for which we drank, and all things were depressed and borne down thereby. All things save only the flames of the seven iron lamps which illumined our revel. Uprearing themselves in tall, slender lines of light, they thus remained burning, all pallid and motionless. And in the mirror which their luster formed upon the round table of ebony at which we sat, each of us there assembled beheld the pallor of his own countenance, and the unquiet glare in the downcast eyes of his companions. Yet we laughed, and were merry in our proper way, which is hysterical, and sang the songs of Anacreon, which are madness, and drank deeply, although the purple wine reminded us of blood. For there was yet another tenant of our chamber in the person of young Zoilus, dead, and at full length he lay enshrouded, the genius and the demon of the sea. Alas, he bore no portion in our mirth, save that his countenance distorted with the plague, and his eyes, in which death had but half extinguished the fire of the pestilence, seemed to take such interest in our merriment as the dead may haply take in the merriment of those who are to die. But although I, Oinos, felt that the eyes of the departed were upon me, still I forced myself not to perceive the bitterness of their expression, and gazing down steadily into the depths of the ebony mirror, sang with a loud and sonorous voice the songs of the Son of Tears. But gradually my songs they ceased, and their echoes, rolling afar off among the sable draperies of the chamber, became weak and indistinguishable, and so faded away. And lo, from among those sable draperies where the sounds of the song departed, there came forth a dark and undefined shadow. A shadow such as the moon, when low in heaven, might fashion from the figure of a man. But it was the shadow neither of man nor of God, nor of any familiar thing. And quivering a while among the draperies of the room, it at length rested in full view upon the surface of the door of brass. But the shadow was vague, and formless, and indefinite, and was the shadow neither of man nor God, neither god of Greece, nor god of Chaldea, nor any Egyptian god. And the shadow rested upon the brazen doorway, and under the arch of the entablature of the door, and moved not, nor spoke any word, but there became stationary and remained. And the door whereupon the shadow rested was, if I remember aright, over against the feet of young Zoilus, shrouded. But we, the seven there assembled, having seen the shadow as it came out from among the draperies, dared not instead any behold it, but cast down our eyes, and gazed continually into the depths of the ebony mirror. And at length I, Oinus, speaking some low words, demanded of the shadow its dwelling and its appellation. And the shadow answered, I am Shadow, and my dwelling is near the catacombs of Ptolemais, and hard by those dim plains of Eleusion which border upon the foul Charonian canal. And then did we, the seven, start from our seats in horror, and stand trembling and shuddering and aghast. For the tones of the voice of the shadow were not the tones of any one being, but of a multitude of beings.
Challenge to find a way out. Of course, there's always my way. Your cadaverous pallor betrays an aura of foreboding, urging you to stay. Our tour begins here in this gallery, where you see paintings of some of our guests as they appeared in their corruptible mortal state. Lurking at your side is an unseen ghost. Kindly step all the way in, please. And consider this dismaying observation. This chamber has no windows and no doors. There's no turning back now. 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 Almost as though you sense a disquieting metamorphosis.
Time to go.
We've been dying to have you.
Foolish mortals.
From crypts and tombs all over the world.
I am your host. Madame Leota is assembling all the spirits who have been just dying to meet you.
When hinges creak in doorless chambers,
and strange and frightening sounds echo through the halls. Whenever candle lights flicker, where the air is deathly still, that is the time when ghosts are present, practicing their terror with ghoulish delight. Sanctuary for the disembodied.
The cheese is the universe. To the world is the corpse, the corpse is the cosmos. How then can we be so cocksure about our world? Just because of our telescopes and microscopes and the splitting of the atom? Certainly not. Science is but an organized system of ignorance. There are more things in heaven and on earth than the breadth of your philosophy. What do we know about beyond? Do we know what's behind beyond? I'm afraid some of us hardly know what's beyond. But who is as lucky as that? To whom does it happen? Not one among millions and millions of people. My name is Theodore, and I will find the forests by the Aryakas older and larger than the gray mansion of my family. But not one, I am quite sure, that one that is more tainted with melancholy. And we will live there, having called eccentrics and dreamers. I suppose the unusual appearance of our house, with its twisting hallways, its grotesque paintings, the gothic atmosphere of the library, and the somewhat peculiar character of its contents, yes, I suppose all this must have been good reason for such a feeling. My earliest memories are tied closely to the library. My mother died there, their tragedy never fully explained to the life of my father. There I spent my boyhood in books and my youth in the reverie. And the years went, and as a grown man I stayed on the go of my forebears. The realities of the world outside seemed to be like visions. And the world of dreams that became my everyday existence. I want to tell him about the Aryanis. She and I are cousins, and we grew up together in the house, but we grew differently. I was ill of health, always wrapped in gloom, while she, swift and graceful, overflowed with joy and energy. Hers were the peasant dances in the village, the rambling of the wind on the hillside, the galloping on horseback through the woods. Mine was the withdrawal, the anguish, the searching of dark things. She roamed through life, plucking flowers, dancing, singing, unaware of the shadows of her heart. Aryanis, haunters of my dreams, your image is vivid before me. Your raven black hair, your witching eyes, your fragrant lips, your lovely young form. Oh, days and places lost beyond recall. Oh, fairyland, follow on. Disease, a crippling disease, fell there. To kill her body, her mind, her habits, and in the manner subtle, most hideous, corrupted their essence of being. In the brightest days of beauty, I never desired her as I desire her now. A sickly, frenzied passion for the wasting form began to obsess me. An incomprehensible craving. And in an evil moment, I
spoke to her of marriage.
The date of our wedding was approaching, when one afternoon I sat alone, or so I thought, in the library. From outside, like remote drums, came the monotonous beat of the rain. A gust of wind rustled through the leaves, and as I started up, she stood before me. Berenice. She spoke no word, and I could only stare at her. Her hair was a dank yellow, and fell over her temples in snaky coils. Her face was bloodless, as if molded from wax, not solid, but melting, reshaping, moist with the dew of decay. And as I stared and stared and stared, her lips, her thin, shrunken lips, parted, and in a smile of peculiar meaning, the teeth of the dying Berenice revealed themselves to me. Would I have ever seen them, or have you seen them died? The moving of the curtain, the closing of the door, Berenice has left the room, but my mind still clung to the image of the teeth. Not one speck on the surface, not one shadow of their memory had escaped me. They had burned themselves into my memory, they had bitten themselves into my brain. It was small, narrow, and pointed, cold and precious. They glistened like daggers in the moon. Those teeth, those glittering teeth, those luring, quivering, beckoning, promising pearls of teeth. They were my destiny. They alone would bring me peace. Then the voices, yes, a sudden chaos of voices. Murmuring, muttering, whispering voices, gibbering, jabbering voices, people coming, people going, a doctor, a priest. And from the chapel, the tolling of the bells, bum 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 bum. Berenice was dead. 3 days passed. Again I found myself sitting in the library, and as always, alone. It was late at night, and I knew since the setting of the sun she had been there, but of the time from then to now I had no recollection. I was just awaking from a dream, a strange dream of a deserted garden, shadowy and cool, with marble stones and crosses. A beautiful garden, nourished on human flesh. And there is a grey mausoleum. Its doors swing open. Steps wind their way below. A void. Candles burning bright and motionless. A young woman in a coffin. Someone is approaching. Stretches out, hands, bends over the body. Lips broken, grinning gums. A mouth splintered, bone bare.
Of his life, most of it gibberish. But in a way, they were a fitting epitaph to Mr. Lafferty's life.
I wouldn't say he was the loneliest man who ever lived, but he was probably one of the most disturbed individuals. You could see it in his eyes. Right behind his surface, he was kind of dead man. Not a cannibal or anything like Jeffrey Dahmer, not a raving, crazy thing. But he knew the big picture, and he knew that everybody around it was going to die, including the planet. And that's a lot to comprehend when you try to use your life as an instrument of positive change when you know that everybody around you is going to die. And he used to tell me that he'd rather die before the end of the world. And when I asked him when the end of the world was, he replied, "Look to the Aztec calendar. That's when the doors close." So, he was a smart man. But I do think that these tapes will be a great epitaph to the ramblings of probably the last sane man in the 21st century.
But calm yourself. We're about to participate in a seance.
This has been Mind Walk, an Upstart Radio production.